Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and on this podcast, we offer expert advice so you can have an amazing sex life. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com, where you will find lots and lots of beautiful resources to serve you wherever you are in your sexual journey. Get started at pleasuremechanics.com/free and sign up for one of our free mini courses where we can deliver our best sex advice straight to your inbox. And when you're ready to master new sexual skills like foreplay or couples massage or spanking or prostate massage or butt fucking or any of those delightful things, sign up for one of our premium multimedia online courses so we can guide you stroke by stroke in mastering these sexual skills. Use the code SPEAKINGOFSEX for 20% off the online course of your choice. Today's episode is part 2 of a 2-part episode that's in response to a listener's email. Last week we talked about sex out of obligation and how to navigate the sense of obligation in long-term relationships. And in that episode, which was episode 230, we read the listener's email. We're not going to read it again because it's quite long. But today we want to talk about the second big issue she presented, which is the question of, I have sexual desire, just not for my spouse. And we hear this question from a lot of people in our community, and it comes in a lot of different ways, but this idea that my sexuality is alive, I'm masturbating, I'm having orgasms, but I don't really want to have sex with the one person I'm supposed to want it with. What then? So we're going to tackle that today, but I do want to acknowledge this is a really big question. And there are certain things in your sex life that we can really break down and operationalize and tell you how to give a great hand job and say with no reservations, like, do this, this, and this, and you'll give a great hand job, and there you go. And when we talk about sexual mastery of the sexual techniques and skills, we really stand behind that we have broke it down into steps that you can master specific skills and become one of the best people given hand jobs in the world. Like, we are confident about that. With topics like this, we all bring so much nuanced, it's complicated is what I'm trying to say. Every relationship is different. Everyone's sexuality is different. And so when we tackle topics like this, I just like to put out there, like, we don't have all the answers. If we could make this steps 1 through 5 and you would automatically have desire for your spouse again, like, we could retire, all the sex therapists around the world can retire, and we'd be living in Shangri-La, right? Like, we can give our best suggestions, we can offer ideas for reframing these conversations, we can give you some language to work with, but it's a big topic, and it's certainly bigger than the scope of this podcast.
And it's extremely personal, and so without getting into a lot of really personal information, we can't be speaking directly to this couple or to you. You know, we're playing in a ballpark here, so listen for what is right for you, what's helpful for you, and know that...
Right. Like, a sex therapist working with a couple for 3 years, an hour a week, has 150 hours of one-on-one conversation to tease out the nuances. We're talking to thousands and thousands of people all around the world in different cultures all at once, and so... we're doing our best. Okay, let's do our best here. So the basic setup, and you can go back to episode 230 and listen to this woman's full email. It's definitely worth listening to, is we've been in a long-term relationship. I had some sex out of obligation that I resent. He's feeling undesired and kind of resentful. Our emotional intimacy has broken down, and I'm realizing that while I feel like a sexual person and I have desire for sex and I'm masturbating and I'm having orgasms, I don't really feel like having sex with my husband.
Right.
So that's the basic setup. Sexuality is intact. Orgasms are happening. don't really want to fuck my spouse.
Right.
What then?
And again, this is an extremely common experience for a lot of people. So this person is not alone. If this is your experience, you're not alone. This is very common.
And again, it can happen along a spectrum. You can have like total aversion to your spouse.
Like repulsion.
Repulsion. I don't want them to touch me. I don't want them to breathe on me. I hate the way they chew.
I'm laughing because Chris has a thing about chewing.
But I have a condition. Like, I have a condition where I don't like to hear anyone chew. Okay, that's my own thing. It's not about you. But you know what I mean. Like, there can develop this situation in a relationship where every little thing your spouse does makes you cringe inside.
Yeah.
And you don't want anything to do with them physically, sexually, otherwise. Right? So that's kind of one end of the spectrum of complete repulsion. On the other end of the spectrum is like, well, sex is nice with my spouse and I can enjoy it and I can have orgasms with them, but I'm fantasizing about other people. And when I really feel desire and longing, it's not for my spouse. Right? So there's this whole spectrum where you can fall anywhere along that line, or it might move over time. But the idea is that your person, the person you've committed to, and when we say spouse, you could be married, you can be in a long-term relationship, it's the person you've committed to sexually. Your person is not the person that gets you hot, horny, having orgasms, like the one you're really like wanting. And that person might used to have been that person. Right? Like, most relationships start out of this place of craving one another, wanting to have sex together. And it can be confusing and disorienting when you realize, hey, I still have desire, but it's not for this person anymore. Is my relationship broken? Is my sexuality broken? Am I betraying them just by even having these feelings? And I think that's kind of where we need to start, because it can be really disorienting and confusing. And so we want to demystify some of this for you and first recognize that it's totally normal to be in a long-term relationship and committed to someone and have sexual feeling, sexual desire for other people or other types of people.
Ooh, say more. What types of people? You mean like men and then desiring women, or?
Maybe. I think we're all a little bit sexually fluid. And so, yeah, maybe you're desiring same-sex contact and you're in a heterosexual relationship. Maybe your husband is like a working guy and, you know, is, you know, really good with his hands, and all of a sudden you're really attracted to a totally different type. Like, different kinds of people, right? So it's not like...
Is this where we just feel like we all have this vast spectrum of our sexuality and we partner with one person who speaks to one part of our sexuality, but often there will be others who fit the kaleidoscope of other possibilities,
yeah,
of what we desire?
And being sluts in our previous life, you and I both know this, that you are not ever going to fulfill all of my sexual desires. Because you are you specifically, and you're not a gay man that I'm going to fist. You're not a trans guy who I'm going to have a long-term relationship with. Like, there's so many other parts of me that you will never be.
Right.
And I will never sprout a penis and be the man of your dreams. Mm. I can only be
the butch of my dreams.
The me of your dreams, right? Like, but most people who don't have a super slutty background or who haven't explored their full sexual spectrum kind of come into a relationship with like, you are the best I've ever had and you are my person.
I'll never want anything else.
You will expand to fit my sexual universe.
Mm.
And then as we sexually mature, as we develop, as our fantasies grow, as our lives change, the sexual universe reveals itself to be much bigger than any one person can ever fit. And so desire for other people, other types, other kinds of experiences, other energies open up, and your spouse is never going to fit them. And it starts feeling like, uh-oh, my sexuality is bigger than this relationship can ever fulfill. Or, like, we're kind of starting to expand into that. Or your relationship with this specific person has gotten clogged up, toxicity has set in, and your specific relationship with this one person has been thwarted and you don't want to have sex with them anymore. So I think the first possibility is much easier to handle. Like, let's just get that off the table. Your sexuality is much bigger than any one person can fulfill. If you're having sexual desire for other people, other kinds of people, that's normal and healthy and good. And you just have to realize that there's more sexual choice out there than any one relationship can fulfill. That's why we use fantasy, and that's normal and healthy and fine.
And that's uncomfortable in this world as we have defined relationships and as we think of romance and relationships. So it's normal and fine, and it's still uncomfortable for many people to accept and understand and give themselves permission to accept.
Right. But if that's your problem, that you're just desiring other people but still cool with your spouse and everything's fine and you're still enjoying sex with them, like, we just give you permission to, you know,
fantasize and be okay with your desires and let that fuel your eroticism and still choose your partner if that's your agreement and that's what you want to be doing.
But I think the situation for most people is this harder situation. Yeah. So let's dive into that. So the person you've chosen, the person you've committed to, you're now living a life with. You're living a domestic life,
possibly a long-term
relationship, and things come up. Emotions come up, and shit happens that then clog the works that make sex with that person less desirable. And over time, this accumulates to a complete blockage. I'm having, like, plumbing and sewage imagery coming to me, that a little bit of scum, you know, the water still flows and you can still fuck one another and you can override that and still have great sex. But over time, if emotional baggage and
resent
and feelings of hurt and feelings of being ignored and all of these other things build up, you can arrive at a place, and sometimes it can feel quite sudden, and other times it's this very slow, excruciating process, and you see what's happening but don't know how to change it. You arrive to a place where you do not want to be physically intimate. You do not want to have sex of any kind with your spouse.
Because there's just so much in the way. There's so much unspoken. There's so much hurt, and you haven't dealt with it. You haven't cleaned cleaned the mess that is between you.
And once again, we're going to refer you to episode 227, where we talked about managing your turn-ons and turn-offs and the dual model control of arousal. And just to remind you that emotions can either be in the category of things that arouse you or things that inhibit your arousal, the gas pedal or the brake pedal. And these kinds of things we're talking about, resentment, anger, feelings of being ignored, often stack up on your brake pedal to the point where even if you know how to have sex with one another, you know how to give each other orgasms, no amount of excitement can override those inhibitors. And so you get to the point where you start having sex and you don't get anywhere arousal-wise, you're not going to have orgasms, you don't feel engaged, or you don't want to initiate sex or accept sex at all. So how do you deal with that? The complete blocked pipe of sexual intimacy, so much buildup that it's just a no-go. You don't want to have sex with your partner, and you're recognizing that it's not something within you. Like, your sexuality is good, because that's a whole other issue. If, like, your own libido is shut down, you're not feeling sexually turned on. Your sexuality is good. It's the relationship that is not working.
That's, first of all, great information.
What then?
Right. What's then?
So what's the good information?
The good information is that in this situation, with this person, her body is working, her libido is there, and it is just about the relationship. Right. So you know, you can identify the issue and the problem.
And I think it was really interesting when she said, I'm doing all this research and I'm hearing so many stories of women who lose their libidos completely. And what if that's all a myth? Because in this culture that tells us if you have a partner, they're the person you should be having sex with, and if you don't want to have sex with them, something's wrong with you, it's really easy to then translate, I have no appetite, because I don't have appetite for Bob.
Uh-huh.
But it's, you have an appetite,
you just
don't want Bob.
And it's such a, this is a huge subject, because of course we make it her fault.
Right.
Right? Where it's like, actually, maybe it's really in the relationship and it's the between you, and men need to learn a different way of being in a relationship, and we need to learn how to make requests of our partners. Like, there are just so many cultural pieces within the relationship that set it up so we just look at the woman and be like, you have a problem with your sexuality.
Right.
And it makes, it's, yeah, anyway.
This or is the man, and like, oh, he's got performance issues, it's something with his dick, he can't get it up. And we, like, problematize the penis.
Right.
And not the entire system of the relationship and the arousal.
Yeah.
Again, really big topic. So let's focus in on this cleaning out process. Because a lot of the couples we hear from, we hear things like what was in the letter from this listener. I love my partner.
He's a great husband. Great partner, yeah.
Great dad. Things are working, but not in the bedroom.
Yeah.
And that, again, is really different from, I don't like this person anymore, we're not compatible, I want out.
Right.
Different conversation.
Right.
But if you find yourself in this situation where things are good, but I can't make that sexual connection, there are steps you can take to get that connection back or get to the point where you can honestly reassess, are we sexually compatible anymore? Do we need to reconfigure our sex life? What's going on? So what is that process? First,
I thought there was a lot of possibility and potential in this relationship. Based on the letter, they have some things, some work to do, but it also seemed like there was a lot that was going right, and I felt hopeful for them.
So I think first is to really remember all the things that are working.
Yeah.
Because to find someone you're compatible with in life, that you can run a household with, that you can co-parent with.
You have beliefs and values that are aligned.
No small thing in this world.
Right. That he is taking care of you in some ways. These are all beautiful and wonderful elements in a relationship.
And not easily replaceable.
That's true.
So I think remembering that and honoring what is working between you needs to be the foundation of this conversation, and to start saying those things out loud. I am grateful for, I appreciate how you.
I admire how you.
Like, how often do you say sentences that start with these kind of clauses of appreciation and gratitude in your relationship? Do it more.
Yeah.
All of us. Just do it
all more. All of us, right. It's never going to be bad to compliment and appreciate your partner.
And that foundation makes it much easier to go into the next step, which is brutal emotional honesty about all of the things that are clogging your pipe.
Can we use the word radical instead of brutal?
Radical honesty.
It's kind of more gentle.
As long as I have my pipe metaphor, I'm good. So, in general, I don't think it's healthy to start dredging up the past and start conversations like, you know, that time when you blah, 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 and then, Ideally, you deal with emotions as they come up, as close to the incident as possible, so it's fresh for both of you, it can be remembered, it can be worked on, and patterns don't start setting. And that's the agreement you and I have, Charlotte, of when one of us does something that pisses the other one off, we try to flag it as soon as possible and have a conversation about what went on and identify what was behind it and change it. And I think ultimately that leads to a lot less buildup, a lot less resentment over time. But if you have that buildup, you need to do some excavating. And in some cases, you can do this. The two of you go on a long road trip, go on long walks. You have to set aside time for this kind of emotional honesty and to sort out what was going on for both of you. Sometimes you will need a third party, a therapist, a mediator who is trained to kind of triangulate your conversation and see patterns for you and guide you in that conversation. I think this is the role that a lot of therapists do really well, because especially if it's like really mucky and really clogged up and you're going back to like core issues that happened even before your relationship, baggage you were bringing in from childhood, that could be really overwhelming for you and your partner to handle alone.
And in your letter, you talked about how your husband didn't want to go see somebody because they didn't want to talk to a stranger about their feelings. And that is totally understandable. But you also have to understand, if you pick a person that you're going to work with, you're going to get to know them a little bit. They're going to get to know you. And it's not going to feel like a stranger. And you're paying them to listen to you and help you. And so just as we take our cars to a mechanic that we don't know that well, they do their job and you all go on your merry way. It's not quite like you're talking to a stranger that's listening to you.
I think a lot of that comes out of fear of being judged, fear of being publicly shamed. A lot of people have aversion to therapy in general. Right. And couples therapy can feel extra vulnerable because it's like, you're going to be talking about my dick to a stranger. But
it's very useful.
For some people,
it can be very useful.
And some people can do it themselves. So identify where you are. And if it starts feeling overwhelming, and if these conversations start feeling like they're doing more damage than good, that's the time to bring in a therapist. Where if you initiate this process and you're starting to have these conversations and talk about your resentments, and at the end you feel closer and better than when you began, maybe you can do this on your own. But the process here is really about identifying the patterns, the habits, the issues that have gotten in the way of your intimacy. So some examples. In our listener letter, it was having sex out of obligation, but the emotional blackmail, the anger, the emotional violence that was coming up when he wasn't getting sex, like those are the issues that she identified. For other people, it might be feeling ignored. So all you do is come home from work and you sit on the couch and watch TV and we never have conversations and I just feel like I don't even know who you are anymore. Or it could be feeling degraded. Like, you always make these comments that make me feel lesser than you. You don't take me seriously. For another person, it might be being humiliated in public in front of your friends. Like, those things that you poke fun at me when you do it in front of your friends, it really humiliates me and makes me feel really upset. Like, any kind of behavior, and sometimes we think we're being playful or teasing our partner and they're actually registering it as deep hurt. And that needs to be identified. Other times it's just not enough attention.
We really want to be seen and heard by our partners. And if that's not happening, our connection starts to dissolve a little bit.
Right.
So you want to set these things up of like, if you do care about your partner, you're starting these conversations of, these are these things I appreciate about you. I love our relationship. I feel like we've gotten a bit off track. There are some things that have gotten in the way. I really want to talk about them and undo them so we can start to feel closer again and recommit to each other. We're distant right now. This hurts. You might feel hurt and upset that I don't want to have sex with you. And that's true, because I feel like this stuff has gotten in the way. And I want to have some hard conversations, but it's because I care about you and I love you and I want us to feel close again.
Yeah, and then the other category that can really come up is like behaviors. Things that are not related to how you're treating one another, how you're interacting, but behaviors around the house or in life that then get put in that sexual inhibition category. So personal hygiene can be a big one of behavior. Constantly leaving wet towels on the floor, no matter how many times I tell you. And every time I see that wet towel on the floor, I register a little bit of anger and annoyance. And it doesn't seem like a big thing, but if that happens every day
for 15 years,
like, that can really build up. That can be just like one atom at a time in your pipe. And it's just that wet towel. And it's like, and feeling disrespected because you've asked for that behavior to change and it hasn't.
So it means something, it's not just about that. It's like what it symbolizes in this bigger realm within the relationship.
Right. And the personal hygiene thing. And then I think there's this whole other category that's really hard to talk about, which is appearance changes.
Quote unquote, they let themselves go.
And that is so charged that I kind of want to acknowledge it and not get too into it, because it brings up so many issues of expectations around beauty and how our bodies change with age and with childbirth and hormones and all these things. But if you feel like your partner just doesn't give a shit about themselves anymore, that can be a huge reason that you don't feel desire anymore, right? Like, it's not about weight, it's not about appearance, it's not about anything really physical. It can be more about them caring about themselves, and therefore you care about them. There's so much there. I'm going to bookmark it for another episode.
Great.
But that can be a factor, and that's harder to talk about, because it's harder to be like, you know, I'd feel desire for you if you just lost 50 pounds.
If you stopped wearing your pajamas around the house all the time.
But which is usually not true, right? Like, it's usually not about the 50 pounds. It's about a whole other series of things behind that. But all of these things, and, you know, we've just mentioned a few dozen. There's probably 792 reasons why your pipes might be clogged.
Inhibitors to your desire.
Yeah, but you first need to do your own assessment before you have conversations. And we often talk about this process of getting real with yourself before you have conversations, because I think it's a much stronger place to come to your partner and ask for their time and attention when you know what you want to say, versus just sit down with them and be like, I'm pissed at you and I don't want to have sex with you anymore. And I don't know why. You know, it's like, if you can really outline the patterns and start the behaviors and addressing those specific things. Because for most people, if they hear that wet towel on the floor has really been pissing me off for 15 years and I need you to take it seriously, it's not just saying, stop leaving your wet towel on the floor. It's like, how do we work together to create a system? Right? Well, the hooks are always full. Okay, let's put up more hooks in the bathroom. Or the hamper is just so far away from where I get changed. All right, let's put a lot. You know, it's like you have to work together with any of these behaviors, because it's not really always just about one person. And so having those conversations, and that might be half an hour, that might be 3 years. Like, that process of dredging out what's been going on, what's been getting in the way, is really, you know, a personal timeline of how long that will take and how deep you have to go.
And whether or not you need support. Yeah. But it's a process.
All you need is that pinprick of sunlight, right? Like, if you have this image of the clogged pipe, you don't need to get it perfectly shiny clean before you start reconnecting sexually. You just need to see the other side.
Just need to see the light.
You need to excavate enough of it that sexual energy can start flowing again. That water can start flowing. Like sexual Drano for the soul or something. Right? Because it's unrealistic to think that the relationship's going to be perfect, both of your behaviors are going to be spot on, and you're never going to annoy each other, we're going to have an amazing sex life. Yeah,
forget about it. Right.
You just need to have enough communication and enough acknowledgement of one another's feelings that you take that seriously, you sense that your partner is committed enough to the relationship that they're willing to put energy towards
making it work.
Right? Yeah. Like, there are patterns in our relationship that we've been working on for 10 years solidly. And we've been talking about them for 10 years. And when we sit back, we can really assess, wow, we've come a long way in these arenas. And these are, like, the deep family patterns, like, communication patterns that have been established by our families. And we see them reflected in our mothers and raw. These are the things that we'll never be done working on those things. Right. But the fact that we have this open channel of communication when something happens that triggers that response again, it's like, oh, right, we're back again in this and I'm working on it and I have been working on it. And you see how much effort I'm putting in, right? Yes. Okay. Like, we can move forward. It's when things go unspoken and unresolved that it just feels like
impenetrable, yeah, if you will.
Yeah. So those conversations are really the foundation of this. And unless you're willing to throw in the towel, if you're willing to throw in the towel and walk away from this relationship and dismantle your life and get a divorce and figure out custody of the kids, like, you're in a totally different stage. If you want to make this relationship work and want to reestablish a sexual connection, you need to be willing to put in the time and get vulnerable enough and get real enough to have these conversations, to be real about the patterns that are causing this resentment and move forward.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. On both sides, and hear what your partner has to say also.
Yeah, because you can't come to this thinking like, I've got this list. And the pipe is blocked from both sides. Right. Like, yeah. You have to be willing to.
Right.
If you dish it out, you gotta take it. Is that phrase?
I don't know.
Okay.
So that is step one. And we talked about that in the last episode also. But getting the emotional state of your relationship cleaner.
Cleaner.
Yeah. And both being willing to do some of that work. Paying attention to your relationship.
Yeah.
Being honest.
And pay attention specifically to the behaviors and patterns around your sex life that have caused resentment and anger and guilt and shame and fear. right? It's like the wet towel on the floor, the, you know, thing annoying you say in front of your friends, like those all count towards your sex life. But the ones that cause the most hurt, the biggest blockages, are going to be patterns of rejection, patterns of embarrassing your partner, shaming them about their desire, not feeling safe in the bedroom, not feeling safe expressing your desire, not feeling safe getting aroused. Like, all of those things are kind of the ones you want to hone in order to clear enough space to feel sexually safe again.
And can I just say that I think that for men, getting rejected is a really deep upset. I mean, it is for all of us, but I just want to speak for men, speak to that piece for a minute. I think in our culture, we have equated men's success and excellence with being wanted sexually. And so to be rejected sexually again and again can really lead to a deep sense of inadequacy, failure, yeah, unworthiness, sadness, aloneness.
Yeah.
Just so much hurt.
Yeah.
And so we also have to understand that, of course, the women are having a whole experience, and this is very gendered, and, you know, forgive me, please put in whatever you want to, you know, this is a range, there's a range, of course, but that we need to understand that that experience is happening for men. So in this person's story, she talks about how he becomes really unpleasant when he gets rejected, and it impacts the whole family for days. And so we need to understand that that is coming from his own hurt. And so as we're having these conversations, to try and bring as much kindness and compassion as we can to ourselves and to our partners for what they're going through. These are uncomfortable and deeply personal and private hurts that we're feeling and have felt over years. And so try and be gentle, try and be our best selves, even as we're talking about these things, and keep just trying to make small improvements, and change can happen.
The other important piece to acknowledge is that some people need to feel emotionally connected in order to have sex, and other people need to have sex in order to feel emotionally connected. And some people gender this, like men often find emotional intimacy through sex, and women find sex through emotional intimacy. I think we all have a different relationship to this dynamic. But if you haven't been sexually connected in a long time and you're trying to have these emotional conversations, sometimes you can feel just so distant from one another that you don't even want to emotionally open up to one another. You don't want to get vulnerable because you don't feel safe doing it. And so trying to incorporate some physical touch in this process can be a good thing, because it's that bridge between total physical distance and hot, passionate sex again. Can you hold hands? Can you touch one another? Can you lie in bed naked together and breathe? Like, what is your level of authentic physical connection now? Do more of that and allow that to kind of start bridging this gap.
So you're partly talking about holding hands, for instance, while you're having these hard conversations, or you're talking about in the rest of the relationship, trying to add that affectionate touch in as well.
All of it. Like, yeah, acknowledge that there's this dual thing between the emotional intimacy we're experiencing and the physical intimacy. And some people mm-hmm. need the physical intimacy in order to feel safe opening up emotionally.
Got it.
Other people need the emotional intimacy yeah. in order to feel safe physically. And so finding your common ground of what is the physical connection you both feel safe and authentic doing? What is the emotional connection? Doing more of both and kind of starting to open up a pathway that way. And then you start getting to assess your sex life again. And as I said, like, if you start easing back into physical intimacy, knowing that that might be holding hands on your walk, reaching across the car and putting your hand on their thigh, like, these small gestures count over time.
They really do.
Yeah, and doing more of that. And then you can start building into, may I give you a foot massage? May I give you a back rub tonight? These bigger gestures of physical affection and touch together and quality time together, and taking the pressure off of intercourse. One of the foundational exercises in sex therapy is called sensate focus, where if a couple's having a problem with their sex life, they take sexual intercourse off the menu, and then they give them like a 6 or 8 week program of, first you just touch one another's hands and really focus on how that feels, and then you bring the caress up to the elbow, and then you da da da, and only after this whole program do you, you know, get naked and touch. And it's this idea, again, of taking intercourse off the menu and reestablishing that physical intimacy. And yeah, we can talk more about sensei focus another time, but there's a long tradition of this idea of acknowledging that intercourse as this ultimate thing, which shouldn't be in the first place, but intercourse is off the menu. We acknowledge we're not having sex, but how can we connect, do more of that, slowly warm up the relationship? Meanwhile, you need to start thinking about your own desires. And in your solo sex life, so we've, you know, the whole premise of this conversation is that you have masturbation going, you're fantasizing, you have your own sexuality. And so being honest with yourself about what's new in your sexual world, how are you different from when you first partnered with your spouse, and what drew you to your spouse in the first place? So kind of getting to know yourself as a sexual being and then remembering why you chose to commit to this specific partner. Because in that remembering, you often find the clues of your interest in one another in the first place, which it's so easy to lose sight of. So a great conversation to have is revisiting, reenacting as much as possible the early stage of your relationship. Start dating one another again.
I think that is so important when you're at this sort of crisis point in your relationship. Cleaning up and then say, like, we need to have a fresh start. We need to start over. We need to assume that we really don't know each other anymore. And we need to start dating again and take sex off the menu and let us just begin again and try and see each other and understand each other and try and have actual conversations about what we're feeling and what we desire for the future and what we fell in love with in the first place. Let's try and remember why we picked each other. I have forgotten. You know, it's really about trying to see and value and appreciate one another again. And that does involve taking time and effort and clearing your schedule and getting a babysitter. You are in a crisis moment. You need to invest time and effort into your relationship or else it will just peter out. And that is a choice that you can make. But
the key here is you're not going on a date. You're not getting the babysitter and getting dressed up and going on a date and then sitting across the table from each other and talking about, you know, the school schedule and your bills and what's going on at work.
Right. You want to
You didn't do that in your first dates.
Right.
What did you do on your first dates? How did you behave? What did you talk about?
And what did you do? Did you go go-karting? Did you go to movies and go for long walks because that's what you love to do? Did you go hiking? Like, what do you as individuals actually love to do? You need to start having fun together. What have you always wanted to do? What did you, you know, just really start that conversation of like, how do we want to spend time together? What feels fun?
And recreate those sensations and with the full acknowledgement of here we are 12 years into our relationship. You're not a stranger. We're not going to pretend like we're strangers, but we're going to get to know each other in this way that recaptures the spirit of those first dates. And storytelling is a powerful way to begin this process. How did we meet? What did you notice about me right away? What drew you to me? Who did you talk to? Like, which friend did you call after our first date?
And what did you say?
Who's the first person you admitted that this might be something special? Mm. When did you start thinking that we might get married? Mm. You know, have these conversations which you may never have had before. Like, when did your partner think that you were the one? Which, we don't believe in the one, but, right? Like, when did you fall in love? How did that happen? Tell that story to one another. And then look across the table, realize, here we are 11 years in. What do we want for the next 10 years? What's our vision of our relationship together? Do an inventory and an assessment. And this will bring up a lot of gratitude for your life. Like, God, you know, our kids are 8 and 10. They're doing great.
They're awesome.
They don't need us as much anymore. Like,
there's going to be more time for us to spend time together.
What's next between now and when we become grandparents? You know, it's like, what is this next chapter of our life about? Because part of the feelings of being trapped and feeling like stuck or in a rut that can translate into the bedroom or sometimes just about your life itself. Like, you've been through this huge excitement of meeting your partner. You've been through the wedding. You've been through having kids. Like, you kind of have accomplished all these things together. These chapters have closed. And maybe this is just fresh to me because, like, I think we're at this juncture right now. Like, I'm better after being sick for a year. We have a kid after trying for 4 years. We got through pregnancy. Like, she's now 2.5, and I'm kind of looking and I'm like, all right, what's next? Mm. And that's this really exciting moment for me. But until I identified that, I was feeling a little bit like, ew, like, what's going on in my life? Like, I'm feeling a little bit like, sticky.
Mm.
And as soon as we started this conversation of envisioning the next chapter, and I don't know, I'm a writer, so maybe this metaphor works for me, but as soon as I turn that page to a clean slate and I'm like, ah, I love my partner, I love my daughter, I love my job, these things are working really well, but I need to start writing the next story.
Yeah.
And doing that together and acknowledging that I want to do that with you. It really reinvigorated, like, my passion for you and my excitement about life. And to be able to do that together and set some goals together can be a really bonding exercise.
It's very enlivening to envision a future together and be a team and explore what can we create together? What do we want as individuals that will help us feel fulfilled and happy? And how can I help you with that? And how can you help me with that? And how can we do this together? It's a really, really beautiful conversation.
And then part of that conversation is, what are the conditions we need to have a good sex life again?
What would that look
like? And hopefully it's an again. Like, maybe you've never had great sex with this partner and you want to. You had good sex in the beginning and then it fizzled out. But if you frame the conversation of, we both want a good sex life in our future. Like, we're not done with sex yet. Mm. Okay, we want a good sex life. We want that together. Now, what does that look like? That leads you into setting your own erotic goals and setting the stage for, what are the conditions? What are the behaviors you need? And some of that will be relational. Like, I need to have a date with you twice a month where we really talk and check in with one another. And I need that conversation to be in place. So we're going to go on a walk and then out to dinner twice a month. Some of that might be personal. I need more time to take care of my own body and feel physically alive. So I'm going to sign up for a dance class. It's something I've always wanted to do.
I need help with babysitting, or we need to, like, put some funds towards more babysitting so I can have time for myself, so I can feel like a person that wants to be sexual. That is a really important thing for a lot of people, and especially a lot of mothers.
Yeah. So it's really identifying the conditions needed to have a sex life together and to do that as a team. Like, you are in this together, and it's not pointing the finger of, like, you need to do this to make me feel turned on by you again. It's, we know this is possible. And I think that's also a piece of it, is remembering you chose to have sex with each other in the first place. You know you can have sex with one another in a way that's pleasurable.
You said he was a good lover and he was good in bed.
Yeah, like, if those things are true, they can be true again. And you just need to figure out what will set the stage for that and be really honest, and then both take action towards that goal and keep checking in and holding one another accountable. Like, we said we'd do this twice a month. It's been 2 months since we made time for it. Like,
can we reprioritize it?
Yeah.
I know it's hard to do in our life, but it's really important to me that we stay connected as a couple.
Yeah.
For instance.
And then as your physical intimacy starts opening up again, and maybe you're not having sex again, but you're rolling around in bed and you're teasing one another and you're masturbating and, like, it's starting to open up again, there can be an assessment phase of, how has our sexualities changed? Is there something new we want to explore together? Like, maybe one of you has been fantasizing a lot about kinky sex and you're really interested in erotic submission, but this is never something you've talked about with your partner. And that's this kind of big thing that you are experiencing a lot of desire around, but you have no idea how you could map your husband into that. Like, I want to be sexually submissive, but not to you, right? Like, you need to then have that conversation about what your desires are. What is real for you right now about sex, and how might that work together? What is the overlap there? Because your husband might be a big bad brute and you've just never seen that side of him. And he might just need permission, and he's been trying to be sweet and tender with you and oh so respectful of you. and be so kind and check in with you every 5 minutes. Oh, does this feel good? And is this right? And are you okay, honey? And you want a totally different set of behaviors from him, but he's never been given permission to go there. Or your husband might be really excited about dressing up in your lingerie and doing it when you're out of the house and get really turned on by that. And he's never felt the safety of admitting that. And as soon as he does and realizes, like, that might be okay with you, a whole new world opens up for you sexually and you're off on your adventure. But there takes a certain truth-telling process to discover what your next sexual adventure is. Because most people don't want to reconnect sexually and then find themselves back in a sexual rut of, like, doing it the same way every time. We need novelty. We need change. We need a dynamic sex life. And if you're going to do that together, you're going to have to explore some new things and open up about your fantasies. And we're all a little kinky. We all have sexual desires that are outside the, like, kiss, kiss, licky, licky, sucky, sucky, fucky, fucky script. Like, we all want something more.
Mm.
What is that for you? Can you say it out loud? And can you invite your partner into that adventure?
And that is partly about understanding that we are always evolving as sexual beings. And if you've been in a long-term relationship, we have to at some point understand that and have conversations that will allow for us to change as sexual beings. Like, understanding that, yes, we've never explored that and we haven't thought it was okay to talk about that, but we might be changing as what we want.
Yeah. It's that philosophical thing of, you don't step in the same river twice. Like, it's the same river, but different water all the time.
Mm.
And you can look at the river and be like, I've been here before. I know exactly what that river's all about. You've never been to that river before. And if you remind yourself of that, I've never had sex with this person before.
We are always changing. And we're always new.
Always true. Then it always becomes, how can I be with you now? How can I serve you now? What can we explore together now?
What is it that you want right now?
And that's a totally different way to do a long-term relationship. Like, right. We have all of this trust. We have all of this safety. We have all this knowledge of each other's bodies. I know exactly how you like your nipples stimulated. Like, I know you. I know you. I've got you. You know me. We can be safe together.
But what do you want right now?
What's our next adventure? Totally different model of a long-term relationship than most of us have set out expecting and resigning ourselves to in some way of, like, all right, you know, it's a whole thing of, like, oh, you're gonna eat the same cereal for breakfast every morning. Like, we're not cereal. We are not, like, a commodified industrial product that's the same every time.
We are always different.
Ugh. Okay. So that's the process. And then, and only then, can you have the conversation about opening up your relationship, staying in a companionate relationship and having sex with other people. Like, if you skip all of these other steps and you have all this resentment and your pipe is clogged and you feel shitty about the other person and the towel's on the floor and, like, you're pissed off all the time and you're like, well, I don't want to be having sex with you, so fuck it, we're going to go have sex with other people. It's just going to be a disaster.
Just get divorced and then go have sex with other people if you want to do it that way. But if you are interested in your relationship, commit to it fully. Try all the emotional stuff first. Be gentle, start dating again, explore just a little bit of physicality until it feels authentic, and then do a little more.
And then if you want to talk about a threesome or a swinging club or an open relationship, you're in a much stronger place with all this emotional communication, and then you can have that conversation, and that might be the right answer for you. Like, we are dedicated to one another. We are monogamous, but we don't believe that monogamy is the only answer.
For everyone.
And there's so many different ways of doing an open relationship, from you can, like, be on online chat rooms with people you'll never meet and have, like, a little erotic spark that way, to full-on open relationships. You have five lovers and we have a spreadsheet to, like, arrange our schedules. Like, there's so many stages and steps in between. It's not an all-or-nothing conversation, but you have to start the conversation from a place of emotional clarity and really loving one another and enjoying one another and being committed to your relationship. So if you're at the point where you're, like, rolling around in bed and you can laugh and you can enjoy one another's bodies, but you're just not getting it up for one another anymore, and you're like, we both have all this sexual energy, it's just not for each other, but we want to keep our family intact, we want to be in a relationship, now where do we go? That can be a great place to start a conversation about an open relationship and having other lovers. But then and only then. So we know we took on a really big topic with this podcast, but we would love to hear from you about what has worked to rekindle desire for your spouse, or what you've done when you have found yourself with lots of desire, but not necessarily for your spouse or particular lover that you're supposed to be wanting to have sex with. Get in touch with us at pleasuremechanics.com and go to pleasuremechanics.com/hello to record us a voicemail message or send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.